Freedom Scientific has a new CEO. He is Dr. Lee Hamilton, who joined the company in March as president of their blindness and low vision group. He began his role as CEO on August the 1st and joins us for this interview on Main Menu. Dr. Hamilton, welcome to the program, and first of all, congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you very much.
What motivated you to become a part of an assistive technology company? Because it seems like a bit of a departure for you from what you were doing before.
I actually was brought into the company initially in a consulting role because I knew some of the people on the board, and I was very impressed with what I saw, a company that had some leading products in a number of areas, a very strong position in the market, and I thought an opportunity to do even more for its customers and therefore grow the business.
It's a kind of a departure for you, though, in the sense that you've been dealing with some pretty high-profile companies, such as Motorola, where you held a number of positions, and then with AirNet. What was the attraction of assistive technology in particular?
Well, although this is a sort of a special application, Freedom Scientific is fundamentally a technology company, and that's what I've done for a long time, conceive of and deliver products to the market, high technology products to the market. And I think the mission at Freedom Scientific is essentially that, to develop best-in-class assistive technology products. So I don't see it as much of a departure from the role that I would play here. It is certainly a different market, but I am very lucky in that at Freedom Scientific we have a lot of very strong, experienced people that understand the market very well.
And you've got a good grounding in electrical engineering, obviously. What about your management skills? What kind of competencies do you bring to the company as a manager?
I'll tell you a little bit about my background. I got a PhD in electrical engineering in 1986. I was a professor of electrical engineering for 4 years. I was lured away to go to Motorola and very quickly rose from being a technologist at Motorola to running a number of their startup or smaller businesses, including their wireless LAN business and their central site telecommunications business. So I had a lot of experience there running and growing small companies, which I would put Freedom Scientific in that class, and then left there to go to more of a traditional venture startup, AirNet Communications, where we had a lot of success. We took the company public in 1999. The company was unfortunately impacted, like a lot of companies, by the telecom downturn, and that's how I ended up here at Freedom Scientific.
You know, when companies merge and get formed in the way that Freedom Scientific was formed, when you bring three former competitors, I guess, in some respects, together, there are all sorts of cultural issues that tend to stem from that, territoriality, trying to find a new company culture. And I think it's fair to say Freedom Scientific experienced a bit of growing pain in that regard. How do you feel about the culture of Freedom Scientific a couple of years on?
Yeah, I think the company has an excellent culture and is very much customer-focused and has a sense of mission that we're developing, software and hardware products that allow blind and low vision and our blind and low vision customers to change their world. And there is a sense of mission among most, if not all, the employees that I think is really refreshing and fun. And that's one of the reasons that I came to Freedom Scientific, because I saw an opportunity to develop products that really help people change their world. And that's exciting to me.
There was a lot of tension and bitterness and even some departures over the what's now become the PacMate and the next line of portable assistant for blind people, which I guess put the Blazy division at loggerheads with the Hinder Joyce division to some extent. Are you confident that kind of rivalry is behind the company now? People are looking firmly ahead?
I'm probably not as familiar with the history as you are, but clearly we know what our customers want. We've talked to a lot of people about, what the PacMate's going to do and the features it's going to have and what our options are. And it's very clear that essentially an iPac optimized for a blind or low vision customer is the right product. And following the Microsoft model of Pocket Windows on a handheld device is clearly the right choice. I don't think there's any internal debate about the direction that we've taken or any question that it's the right direction.
So given that the PacMate is on the horizon now, what kind of future do you see for the Blazy line of note takers? Are they just about past their use-by date given the technology that's inside?
You know, I don't think so. We envision there's going to be two classes of note takers. There's going to be the PacMate line, which is Windows and is based on Windows and Windows applications running with JAWS on top of that. And this is for, you know, the experienced desktop computer user who's probably using JAWS on their desktop. But we also see a place for the note takers, for people who want a simpler device, easier to use, not as complicated, that can still perform the basic functions of a note taker. If you want to think about it, I mean, in the market today for PDAs, there are Palm Pilots, which is a very simple device that does a few things well, and a lot of people buy those. There's also a market for iPacs, which essentially run Windows applications, and a lot of people buy those. And I think the same, you know, the note takers are the equivalent of the Palm Pilot, and the PacMates are the equivalent of the iPacs.
Right, okay. Obviously, as a blind person, I've never used a Palm Pilot, but my understanding is that they will do email reasonably well and even do the web as well. And yet that's something that, I guess, well, the Millennium's having a go at email, but there's no browsing in there. Do you think there might be a gap between the existing Blazy line of note takers and that ease of functionality that you talk about that it's so renowned for and the higher end PacMate? Somewhere there might be a user who fits square in the middle of those two.
I guess that's possible, but I also think, you know, as we continue to add more functions to PacMates and those move, you know, up to where they're becoming more and more like fully functional desktops, you know, we're continuing to add function to the note taker line. And as you mentioned, we just added email. We'll have, you know, this year at least a basic web capability, so you'll be able to access the web for downloading books for your note taker. But I think there's going to be evolution in both lines of products.
That's interesting. So you are looking at some kind of limited browser functionality in the Millennium series?
Specifically for downloading books, because that is something that we've had a lot of demand for, to be able to go to the website, download books to read on your Millennium, and then take them with you.
Do you know at this stage whether you're hoping to support the Bookshare service with
that? That's exactly the... Well, that's one of the ones that we're looking at. That's...
Yeah, okay. Because that involves a little Unpack utility, as I understand it, that would have to be ported over to the Millennium series.
The real issue, which I think everybody's going to face, is that to do a full-fledged web browser with the type of features and functionality people are used to on their desktop is a very big job. So you're going to have to make some choices when you put that on something like a note taker.
I suppose
so we're targeting those applications that our customers have told us were important to them.
And when, you know, I know that people hate these sorts of questions. When are you hoping to see the PacMate on the streets? Is there any firm target for that at this point?
We've said consistently that we're going to be start shipping the PacMates toward the end of this year, and that's still our target, and we're on track for that.
And that'll be the voice-only versions at this point, I take it?
Yeah, that'll be the Braille and Speak version. I'm sorry, the BNS, right.
And any target at this stage for the Braille versions of the PacMate?
We have not set dates for those. Those will obviously be sometime next year. But we will be, as we finish up on the first PacMate versions, we'll be talking about, you know, when the Braille versions would be coming out.
I think there was a lot of interest in the model, the business model behind Freedom Scientific, because as I understand it, there was quite a lot of support from venture capitalists. Has it been harder to grow this market than had first been anticipated when all that investment took place in 2000?
I'm not quite sure how to answer because I wasn't here during all the history. I think you could guess that the expectations were probably higher than what's happened. I think some of that has been the economy, and some of it's been, you know, the challenges that you talked about in terms of integrating three different companies.
what kind of ramifications does that have? Because, you know, one thing that we've never covered here, simply because I haven't been able to find any substantiation, is all sorts of stuff that goes on about, you know, is Freedom Scientific paying the bills? Are other companies trying to acquire bits of it? Do you have any comments about the state of health of Freedom Scientific at the moment in a financial sense?
Well, you know, financially, Freedom Scientific is very strong. We are paying our bills. We're, you know, not trying to sell off parts of the company, and we're focused on, you know, launching the new products, some of which we've talked about, some of which we haven't, like our new Focus line of Braille displays, which came out in June, our new SAL Braille teaching system, which came out in June, and the PacMate products, which will start coming out near the end of this year.
Yeah.
So as you said, there are lots of rumors on the internet, and you can't really go after them all, but that's one that doesn't make much sense.
All right. So there's no question of divesting, shall we say, you know, the Jaws line because of other parts of the company being weaker than that?
The way we see the business in terms of the strategy is that the view of the world today, or the sort of the old view, is that there are software products and there are hardware products. We don't think that that's the right model. We think that the PacMate line is going to be exciting because it's going to leverage our expertise in building handheld computers and our JAWS software and putting those together in a device that gives a blind person, you know, the perfect laptop replacement. And we think you're going to see more of that. So not only are we not planning it, we think it would be wrong strategically. Because the software and the hardware is converging, because it's following the consumer, you know, the broader consumer market, and that's what's happening there.
So, what's the story behind Dick Chandler's departure? Why has that occurred at this particular time?
Well, Dick, it was a planned transition. Dick's contract was over at the end of this year, and so when I was brought on board, that was it was all part of a planned transition for Dick to, you know, gracefully move to a chairman role, and yet at the same time not have any disruption to the company.
So you had always anticipated coming on board with a view to being CEO at about this time?
The plan was always that I would transition to CEO at a time when the board and Dick and I all felt like it was the right time. And we decided that made sense here in August, I guess, today.
So, yeah, so there was no dissatisfaction at board level with his performance in the role?
You know, I think the board would tell you that Dick did a lot of good things for the company, and we appreciate his services.
But?
No, I'm not going to add a but. Are you trying to? You want to add a but?
Well, let's go further and talk about Ted Henter's re-emergence onto the Freedom Scientific board. Ted Henter and Dean Blasey were pivotal to the company when Freedom Scientific was acquired, and in fact, on an interview that we did with Dick Chandler after Freedom Scientific was founded, he said that one of his big challenges was making sure that those guys kept engaged, that they didn't get bored, that they didn't take all their money and go off on a beach somewhere, and largely that seemed to be what happened, that both of them became disillusioned with varying degrees of public comment on that. Does Ted Henter's reemergence signify a vote of confidence in you, that he's going to feel more comfortable with Freedom Scientific's direction there?
We're very pleased to have Ted on the board. I met Ted shortly after I started. I think it was only like my second week. And I believe, you know, when you meet an entrepreneur who has bootstrapped a company like Henter Joyce, you know, to have the type of success that it's had and has such a long and deep experience in the industry, you know, I thought this was somebody that could help us. And I'm very pleased that we've, you know, got Ted on the board and in a more active role to help the company. Because I think he's a great addition, and you know, I think we have a good personal relationship also.
So there are some building of bridges that you're doing?
I'm looking for anybody that can help us be successful, and we want to get the best and brightest, and I think Ted was one of the was a great addition to the board.
Well, the question everyone's asking is that now that Ted's back, does that mean that you might be looking at re-engaging Dean Blasey for his involvement?
Well, I will tell you that I've also gotten to know Dean quite a bit since I've started, and you know, he won't be joining the board because we have 9 seats on the board, and with Ted, we're now up to capacity. But certainly, you know, I value Dean's input, and I talk to him, you know, quite frequently on things where I think he can help the company. And he's volunteered to pitch in and do what he can because he obviously wants to see, you know, the hardware business that he built be successful going forward.
We have covered the focus line quite extensively on Main Menu before, but you also covered, you mentioned Cell earlier, which is something that we haven't talked too much about here. And that's an interesting product because it seems to be reflecting those synergies between the Learning Systems Group and the other parts of Freedom Scientific. Can you tell us a little bit about that system, what it does, and what its target market is?
Well, Cell is a Braille teaching system. Essentially a computer-assisted Braille teaching system. So you put a Braille lesson plan on the unit. You insert the software that corresponds to that lesson plan in the disk drive, and then you can read across a touch-sensitive screen the Braille, and it will input the characters that you're reading, do tests for comprehension, and essentially do all the things that a Braille teacher would do with a student who is learning Braille, except the SAL does that in an automated way, and you can repeat the same character or the same lesson as many times as a student would want. So we think it's a real breakthrough in Braille teaching. And as you know, certainly in the U.S., and I'm not sure how it is in New Zealand, that getting enough good Braille teachers is a challenge because it's pretty labor-intensive, and we think this is going to really expand their reach and increase Braille literacy, which is a very positive thing.
Absolutely. Are you targeting younger Braille readers or more the adult Braille reader who perhaps has gone blind later in life?
You know, we're really targeting this to, you know, the people that teach Braille. It's a tool for them, you know, to expand their reach and teach touch more Braille students faster. So, you know, a lot of the initial applications I do think are going to be with younger students, but it certainly works just as well for somebody that needs to learn Braille later in life.
Yes, now that you've had a chance to bed the company down, I suppose there's always people looking at how you can take advantage of the various product lines that you have for new innovations. And I suppose an example of Kinect Out Loud being shipped with the new version of OpenBook is one of those. Do you ever think we'll see a day when there'll be some sort of combination tool of JAWS and OpenBook, so you'll have your scanning functionality built right in there with the power of JAWS? Will that come, do you think?
It's certainly something we've looked at. I mean, we've gotten some feedback that would be an important. Some people would see that as an important addition. We haven't made any firm decisions. I mean, what are your thoughts on the, you know, how valuable that would be or not valuable?
I suppose it depends on whether it puts the price up, because obviously there'll be some people who would want JAWS, but perhaps maybe happy with the OCR package that they have, either another specialist one or perhaps one of the off-the-shelf ones that work well with the existing screen reader. So I guess that's what you guys are looking at too, whether it puts the price up.
Right, and we're also looking at, you know, other steps, like, you know, do we have an OCR package that's a little more tightly integrated with JAWS and works better, but, you know, still keeps the price in this, you know, keeps the price down. So there are a number. I understand your question, and I don't know that we have made a firm decision about the path we're going to take.
Right, but you're obviously aware that there are possibilities, and I guess you've got to put the business case together and look at the engineering ramifications of more stuff that can potentially conflict in that one piece of software.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we've had feedback about succeeding versions of JAWS adding more layers of little things that just, you know, aren't big things in themselves, but over time they accumulate and they don't get fixed. And I guess this is an issue with any piece of software that's mature. You get it with Microsoft Office as well and various other bits. How do you feel about JAWS 4.5 as the CEO in the context of getting some of those little glitches ironed out, speeding the whole thing up, just making sure it's a more reliable product?
Well, every time we do a new release of JAWS, we look real hard at, what are the problems that we need to fix, because those are obviously important, and what are the new features that people really need to have to still have, to be able to access the tools they need to do their job. And it's always a hard trade-off. And in this version of JAWS, I think we've struck a good balance between fixing problems and also, or fixing older bugs and also adding, some really powerful new tools, especially associated with accessing the internet. The one thing that we are doing, which is going to be different, is we are going to, dedicate a, some resources who do nothing but fix bugs, the highest priority bugs in JAWS. And that's really to try to address some of the tension that we find, and I think what you're sensing, between doing new features versus fixing, bugs that have been there for a while.
Yeah, and every software company, I think, has these pressures that there's a release schedule, and it tends to take a real showstopper to stop that schedule from being adhered to. So the product goes out almost ready or not, it seems to me, and I'm not just pointing the finger at Freedom Scientific, but if there are outstanding issues that showed up in testing that people just haven't had the chance to fix, they tend to remain until the next cycle.
Yeah, there is some of that, although, we try hard to, set the bar at the right height, and if we don't meet that minimum threshold, which is the product better than the previous release, then we don't go out. But I think the other point is, by assigning, dedicated resources who do nothing but fix bugs, we'll see a steady improvement in some of the problems that have been around for a while that are particularly annoying to people.
That's
a recent decision that we've made.
Okay, that's good. Is that already happening, or are you about to deploy those resources?
We're actually recruiting for that now.
Right.
To bring somebody in to do that.
You have somebody who's the bug man, going and squashing bugs all the time.
Talk to the people in technical support, find out what the highest priority calls are about, and then fix those problems.
Yeah, that's excellent. So, I appreciate you coming on the program. I don't know whether there are any other matters that we haven't covered that you'd like to share with the main menu audience, because I guess for many people this will be the first time that they've met you, so to speak, in any particular depth. Is there any other matter that you wanted to touch on?
Well, I guess the point I would make is that we know that Freedom Scientific has had some challenges. You referred to that earlier. We are making changes to better serve our customers and to do a great job with supporting our existing products and also with delivering, world-class new products. And one example is, bringing somebody to focus on JAWS bugs full-time. Another one is, we brought in a new vice president of hardware engineering to really strengthen that team, a gentleman from Motorola who has extensive experience in handheld electronic devices. We brought in a new director of quality to really beef up that side of our business. So we're making a lot of changes to better serve our customers, and we're absolutely committed to doing, the right things.
Yeah, can I just ask you in conclusion, because obviously you've had a lot of experience in the technology area in general, about the relationship between Freedom Scientific and its customers versus other companies you've worked with. I'm just wondering whether, because, if your screen reader's not working properly or your scanning program's not going, it really has a profound impact on a blind person's life. I just wonder whether the nature of the relationship and your experience between customers is different in this industry, more kind of raw, more close than in other areas that you've worked.
Not really, because most of the products I've worked on in the past have been network level products for people that deploy cellular service. So when they have a problem and their cell system is down, they're every bit as excited as a customer who can't do their job. So I understand the big impact that any slip-up on our part can have on our customers, and that's why we're working hard, you know, to make improvements and do a good job.
And of course, access to non-computer-related technology is something that's concerning blind people more and more. It's hard to program the VCR or get the microwave to do what you want it to do or any of those things. Cable TV is getting harder and harder to use with all the on-demand features that they now have. Is that a frontier that you think Freedom Scientific might be able to start to conquer, and do your contacts in that industry, Motorola, for example, when we talk about cell phones, do they help in that regard?
Well, I certainly think it can, and, you know, we're committed to, you know, developing assistive technology products, and we hear the same comments you're hearing about problems with cell phones and appliances and TVs. So it is an area we're looking at, you know, to see if there's a place for Freedom to play there, to use our understanding of, you know, the industry and what customers need to help make those things more accessible. But we don't have any products, you know, on the roadmap right now in those areas.
Yeah, and I suppose it would be a bit of a diversion from your core competency to some extent.
You know, that's debatable. I think there's a good argument to me that one of our core competencies is understanding, you know, how you take computer-like devices and your TV remote control, or you're essentially controlling a computer, and make those accessible in an intuitive and efficient way for a blind person.
Mm.
So that part of our core competence, I think, cuts across a lot of those problems. And some of those areas, we might do those things in partnership as opposed to trying to do it all ourselves. But
right.
I think we do have a core competence.
So you could potentially sell that kind of technology wholesale to a vendor of the product, for example?
Yeah, that would be one model that we would certainly consider.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to focus on the areas where we can add value. We're not hung up on doing everything ourselves.
That's excellent. Well, it's been fascinating speaking with you, and I know that we'll catch up in the future sometime. All the very best in your role, and I hope it goes well for you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and you know, let me know if I can ever help again.